Vanessa Lee is the founder of The Things We Do, a top injector, and a trusted authority in the world of beauty and skincare. Now, she's hosting a podcast. Join her as she covers all the things we do for beauty, best kept secrets, and weird shit included.
Hi guys, welcome back. I have a very, very, very special guest today. I'm so excited to introduce her. You've probably heard me talk about her like 8 million times because I'm obsessed with her skills and her as a person. She's fantastic. I want to introduce you guys to Dr. Sharmila Sunder, who is a double board certified facial and neck plastic surgeon in Beverly Hills, and she did my surgery. Dr. Sunder, welcome to the Things We Do podcast.
Hi, thank you so much for having me, Vanessa.
Of course. How is everything going with being locked in? I mean, you're not locked in your home, but you know, quarantining.
My kids would say we're locked in, but it's been good, actually. You know, I feel this has been a really good time for me to like feel a lot of gratitude for what we have. You know, yes. We're all healthy, our family's healthy, we have a roof over our heads, we have backyard for the kids to play in. So every day me and the kids have a moment of where we like express our gratitude for what we have, because there are a lot of people in the world that are, you know, dealing with much worse circumstances than we are. So yeah, it sucks to not be able to go to work and see my patients every day, but there's so many blessings in disguise that I don't want to take for granted. So it's been good in a lot of ways for me. How about you?
I had a moment yesterday with Kenny, and I was just in the kitchen with him, and he was making lomo saltado, this Peruvian dish that's like one of my favorites. And we were just taking our time, and it takes a lot of like, you know, checking in on the dish. It's not a dish that you rush. And he did the most amazing job, and I like leaned into him and I was like, I don't ever want to go back to work. Like, I like this. And he was like, you're going to regret saying that in about 48 hours. And I was like, right, I don't know. Right. I really like this slow life. It's like being in Hawaii. And he was like, yeah, but we also got to pay bills. And I'm like, I don't want to hear it. So
that's right. I know.
You guys have a pool also, right?
We do. Yeah.
Right now.
It's been nice. It's been nice to kind of take advantage of that and enjoy time with the kids. And my husband said the same thing. He's like, we just don't feel rushed at all anymore. You know, like when the kids were playing basketball, we'd be like, okay, you only have like 45 minutes and then we've got to go in and do homework and this stuff. And it's nice to have just a slower pace of life. So
I agree. Okay. Well, I have some questions for you. We did a previous episode recently where I went into talking about the surgery that I had that you did for me, which was back in December, which feels like a lifetime ago now.
I know.
Even though it was just a couple of months ago. And I explained as best to my capabilities of what you did for me, but can you go into what exactly you did for me and what my options were and kind of what you decided on for me? Because I'm obsessed with my results.
You look so amazing. First of all, you're like beautiful to start off with. So it just made my job that much easier. But what I think was unique about your case that I think is actually pretty common for a lot of men and women is that, you know, a lot of people have fat under or a little bit of fat right under their skin, but then they do things like Kybella or liposuction or whatever it is, and they still don't feel like they have that really nice neck angle that they wanted. And that's because there's a layer of fat even deeper than that. So just to review the anatomy really quickly, when you look at this, the neck tissues, there's skin, and then right under there's a layer of fat. Right under that layer of fat is a muscle layer. It's called the platysma muscle. And under that platysma muscle is another layer of fat, and that's the subplatysmal fat. Mm-hmm. So with Kybella and liposuction, you could get that superficial fat that's right under the skin, but you can't access the fat that's under the platysma muscle. Mm-hmm. So, and that's what was going on with you, is you had like this nice thin neck, but then you had a little bit of fat under the platysma muscle. Mm-hmm. And then the platysma muscle itself was a tiny bit weak. So what we did in your case, was made a little incision there. I got down to the muscle, looked under the muscle, removed a little bit of fat from under the muscle, and then tightened the muscle. And then we did the neck tight procedure just to tighten the skin on the outside. So it was kind of like a three-step procedure that we did to really give you that nice, tight, snatched jawline and neck.
So a lot of people have been asking me, what do I ask from my plastic surgeon? I live on the East Coast. Or if I go see Dr. Sunder, what kind of procedure do I ask for to get your results? What would you call this procedure, like that trio?
We call it the Vanessa Lee special.
Awesome.
No. So, I mean, that trio is it's kind of like a mini neck lift, I would say. I mean, now, like, a lot of people come in thinking they need one thing and they need something else. So there are a lot of people that come in and all they need is just lipo and a little neck tight to tighten the skin and remove the fat. But then other people need work underneath, like you did with the muscle and the subplatysmal fat. And then some people need everything. They need the lipo, they need the skin tightening, they need the muscle tightening, and they need the fat under the muscle removed. And then there are people who are older. You know, you have the luxury of youth, you have really great skin. So you didn't need to remove the excess skin, but there are some people that have like a lot of excess skin or more excess skin than you had. And they actually need to have a neck lift procedure to remove that extra skin. And a lot of people hear neck lift and they're like, oh my gosh, I don't, you know, I'm not old enough for that. Or I'm not ready for that. And it's not like a really invasive procedure. The downtime with that is really about a week for most people.
Wow.
And for some people, it's a little bit longer, but for most people, it's just a week. And the only difference between what you had and what that would entail is a little incision around the ear, and it goes, you know, back behind the ear. And mm-hmm. so that's pretty well hidden. And then any extra skin of the neck is removed that way. So that's pretty well hidden. So after a week, people can go to work with their hair down and no one's going to notice.
After a week, I felt like I looked like a monster and I was still working and everyone was like, I can't even tell. And I was like, do you think my face is this swollen usually? And they're like, honestly, I can't even tell like you're swollen at all. But so it was really something where after the surgery, you suggested I have my head wrapped for about a week, at least a week. Yeah. And so I was really, really compliant and diligent with that because I knew that you did a seamless job and I wanted to do my part and make sure that I did followed all the steps that you suggested for me. But I also was still working on day like 5, 6, 7. So I had my head fully wrapped at the office because I was like, well, my hands still work. I can still poke people. I just won't talk too much or anything. And then after I took it off, it really wasn't that bad. I was surprised, you know, after surgery, even though it was, I think, one of the more minor surgeries, I think, in the scale of what you can do, right?
Absolutely.
So you know what's interesting
is the swelling is more from the neck tight procedure, the radio frequency neck tight procedure that you had. So if we took you and then we took someone else that had like a straightforward neck lift and a platysmoplasty, their swelling would probably be a little bit less than yours because that heat energy, that radio frequency energy causes a little bit more swelling. So, but you're right. There is a little bit, you know, there's like a week of swelling. And actually in some patients, especially the ones that have more skin laxity or had more, fat under the skin, their swelling can last 2 weeks with your type of procedure, even though it's a less invasive, more minor procedure.
I have a question about the face tight. Some people messaged me and have said, you know, my doctor told me that I can just get away with doing the face tight instead of doing the liposuction and also the platysmoplasty. And when they send me photos, they have almost kind of the same thing that I have going on. Are they just misinformed, or do you think that maybe there's some miracle that somebody else has?
That we don't know? You know, I don't, again, without looking at the person and examining the person, I can't address that. However, I've seen a lot of patients who've had neck tight alone or liposuction alone or Kybella alone. And I'm kind of like the tertiary care center where they're like, I've tried everything else. It's not working. So, you know, I kind of see whatever advice people are given, I kind of see them like a year after that, where they've kind of wasted their money and spent all their effort into that. So I really don't think Nektite alone, especially Nektite alone without liposuction, is going to make that much of a difference. And right. In all honesty, when you do Nektite, you have to do at least a tiny bit of liposuction to get that liquefied fat out.
Yeah.
Because what the Nektite does, for people who don't know, is it's a radio frequency heat-based skin tightening device. So when you are doing it, there's a little bit of fat that gets dissolved, you know, it gets melted, and you don't want to leave that melted fat under the skin. That's
right.
Disgusting. It's not good for healing. So, you know, when they train you on that, they tell you, you have to do a tiny bit of lipo at least to get that dissolved fat and like the oils and whatnot out. So anyone that says you're not doing any lipo with that is probably not either misinformed or doesn't quite understand how it works. So there has to be some lipo with it. Now, do they need a platysmoplasty on top of that? That really depends on the patient's anatomy. There are a lot of people that don't need a platysmoplasty with that.
Fantastic. I have a question for you about some of, I think, let's just call them haters. They're haters. Some people have reached out to me after I post about the surgery that I had. Most people, I think, on social media, like 99% of people are like, oh my God, your results are amazing. And then I've had like a 1% of people reach out and be like, you are way too young to get plastic surgery. You should not be talking about this. I mean, I knew a bunch of people who had like boob jobs when we graduated high school and it was fine, but like, I'm not allowed to do this for whatever reason in their eyes. What do you think about this procedure for someone in their early 30s? Is that, do you think I was extreme, or do you think this is more common than people would think?
No, this is definitely more common than what people would think. So like you said, women were getting their breasts done like right out of high school before they go to college. There are a lot of people that have their noses done right out of high school before they go to college. And I think that's kind of become a little normalized in our minds. And this is another area that's just brand new, so people don't quite understand the impact that it has on people. And this procedure wasn't really refined until very recently. And I think in a lot of hands, it's not refined yet. But I would say the under chin neck area, if you were to ask everyone in the world, like, what are your insecurities, or what is an area where you wish you could improve on to really improve your self-confidence, that is like right up there, you know?
For sure.
So I think, you know, for me, and yeah, I'm sure you feel the same way, this is not about vanity. This is like a way for me to allow someone to feel more empowered about the way they, you know, the way they feel, and take control of their confidence, take control of their beauty. And this is another step to that. So why live your whole life, or, you know, live to your 50s feeling self-conscious about something when you could have taken care of it in your early 30s? So I think, I don't think that's an appropriate way to think about it. I have, you know, as you know, I do a ton of facelifts and neck lifts, and, you know, people wait till their 50s, or, you know, some people do it in their 40s or 50s or 60s, whatever. And the common theme after people have their surgeries is, you know, especially when they've, you know, anatomically or genetically had like a weak neck or weak chin, they're always like, I wish I'd just done this so much earlier, yeah, because I could have enjoyed this for so much longer.
Yeah. You
know? So I'm like big on not having any regrets in life, you know, like I want to minimize as many regrets as I can. And yeah. So for me, I always feel sad when people say that. I'm like, why didn't you live your best life 20 years earlier? You know? Yeah. So I think, you know, whatever you can do to make yourself feel better, go for it, whatever age. Now, there are definitely obviously limits, and you and I are very similar in that, you know, there are definitely people that come to me who don't necessarily need anything, and I'm honest with them. Like, I don't think you need it right now. Hold off on it. Or I don't think you ever need it, you know. So it's really important that people go to providers that are honest and ethical.
Yeah.
Having said that, I don't think there's really like an age limit for certain things within reason.
I could listen to you talk about this forever. I'm just,
I could talk about this.
Everything about surgery. Okay. What is your favorite surgery to do for patients?
So my favorite surgery is facelift, neck lift. I love those two. But then I also love brow lifts as well, especially like I've been doing a ton of these mini brow lifts for people that want just like a temporal enhancement, but not nothing too crazy.
So can you walk us through how you do that?
I'm sorry, can you say
that? Can you walk us through how you do the temporal brow lift?
So I use a minimally invasive technique where I make tiny little incisions here. And then I actually use an endoscope, which is like a scope. It's a long scope that allows me to come down to the brow without having to like make a big cut and open everything up. Mm-hmm. And so I just kind of dissect down to the brow and either raise or rotate it. And for me, a brow lift isn't necessarily always about lifting. It's about like rotation. And for a lot of people, it's adding volume. And I think you and I have talked about this before, you know, like 20 years ago when people thought about brow lifts, it was like, raise it as high as you can. And if someone has like a bony brow, it's okay. Just raise it high. But if you really look at, you know, what we all look like when we were in like our late teens or early 20s, it's not that our brows were super high. They were just more plump and full and youthful. And so when you look at like our younger selves and where the light hits, it looked like the brow is high, but it's just because the light hit right under the brow because it had this fullness to it. So for me, doing this brow rejuvenation procedure is not necessarily like hiking it up as high as possible. Right. It's rotating it a little bit and then also filling it with nano fat, which is like a micronized version of fat that you can put in there where it doesn't get too lumpy. So I love doing that. I love facelifts. I love neck lifts. I love doing eyes, upper eyelids and lower eyelids. Lower eyelids I'm very conservative with, but upper eyelids, I think that makes such a big difference doing someone's upper eyelids, and it's such a quick recovery. That's just a few days and you're back to work. So that's always a fun one too.
I love what you do for the brow space and in the lower face area. I do agree that I feel like no one really in the past, and I think when I first started in plastics, maybe like closer to 10 years ago, this wasn't really addressed. It was all about like lifting up here as much as possible and then kind of neglecting, you know, the submental and like neck area. And then I saw what you were doing and I was like, oh, I mean, I already loved you, but I was like, oh, she's my girl. I'm going to her. I have to. And then when you spoke at Beauty Theory about what you can do surgically and also non-surgically with the eye space and like lifting the brow, everything was so artful and articulate, how you explained the anatomy and how you went about making sure that it's just not as high as possible, but fitting all the before and afters that I saw you were placing up on the screen were fitting for that person's anatomy. Like their facial features were more harmonized after you worked on the eye space. I thought that was really powerful because you don't see a whole lot of that. I think it's like a eye bag, no eye bag, you know, with like the lower blefs, but like the, how you can rotate a brow. That's really cool.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's really important that you or any, you know, like I as a provider really cater a treatment specific to the patient, like really customize the treatment to the patient, their anatomy, taking their ethnicity into account, taking like different like layers of like muscle and like fat, and then also thinking about how they're going to age, as well as thinking about how they've aged already. You know, I think it's, you can't just be like cookie cutter about this. You have to be much more thoughtful and artful in a lot of ways. But, you know, going back to like thinking about, I think a lot of the reason why we focus so much on the upper face as opposed to the lower face is, you know, when you're talking to people, this is like the point of communication, the upper half of your face. So that's why you make the tiniest little change in your eyes and people will pick up on it. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, I've made dramatic differences in people's lower faces with like a facelift or neck lift. Like I've taken people who had no neck and given them this like amazing neck angle. And they'll be like, you know, it looks amazing, but I haven't really had anyone say, oh, have you had a neck lift or a facelift yet? Like everyone just says, oh, you look better or you look refreshed to go on vacation and whatnot. And that's because if you yourself are not really worried about your neck, you're not really noticing it on other people. Or even if you are worried about your neck, that's not the first thing you notice on other people.
Yeah, that's true.
When it comes to yourself, I think a lot of people do notice, oh, I just wish it was a little bit sharper. I just wish it was a little bit tighter. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's one of the reasons it's been a little bit kind of in the background in terms of ways to treat it. Mm-hmm. And then also now we're all like on our phones or on these Zoom meetings where we're like facing down and all you can see are is your neck. So I think it's definitely come to the forefront of our thought process now.
Again, I want you to keep going because I'm always like, usually what happens when I interview people is like people will end their answer and then right away I'm like jumping into the next question, but I'm just like, talk forever about this stuff. You're so eloquent. Okay, so I do want to ask you about your community, your colleagues, and your field. A lot of times with injectors, I do feel like with social media, sometimes we can put some misinformation out there. Or people in the community really get excited about certain fads. And it makes me sad sometimes because I don't want people to treat their faces with fads. I want us to, really elevate the aesthetic community and show what we can do for each person's face and what's right for them. What do you feel like you've seen that on social media is just like cringy for you right now?
Well, I agree. I think, I'm a big fan in like the idea of like classic beauty. You don't want to like hop on, especially like, even with clothes, like people that, hop on a trend, that's fine. But like with your face, when you make a change, you 2 years from now, when that fad's no longer there, you're kind of dealing with the consequences. It's like me with my brows. I like overplucked them like crazy in the 90s. And look at me, I'm screwed at this point, Whereas like with fillers, you're kind of really fillers or whatever it is, you can really cause more permanent issues. So obviously the blown out filler is definitely concerning to me, like people that go crazy with the lip filler I'm getting a little concerned about the jaw lines with a ton of filler, especially the ones that are placing it more superficially. So like more sub-Q, and they're filling and filling and filling to the point where it looks very doughy. And I worry about that maybe stretching out the skin, and maybe you're, pushing those people to facelifts a little bit sooner than they would have needed to otherwise. So that I don't love. I'm not a huge fan of those like crazy cat eye brow lifts.
Oh my gosh,
with threads. I think you especially do beautiful work with threads. I've seen your like brow work with threads, and that's really pretty. But you know which accounts I'm talking about, where and I don't know if it's necessarily in the US, but like some accounts where the brows just look insane. And so that can't be good for your tissues. And I think a lot of people can't be good. And I think a lot of people kind of buy into that. That's like a permanent look. And it's, as you know, it's very temporary. So that, that is something else that's concerning to me. And then like a lot of the non-invasive fat dissolving, like the Kybella and things like that. Yeah. I think it's fine within reason, but when you start going overboard, you start damaging tissues.
Yeah.
So I think as long as you go to an ethical provider that's like well-educated, patients will be okay. But it just worries me that there's so many providers out there that really aren't as educated as, they should be. And I don't think they're doing it in a malicious way where they're like, let me like pump you full of whatever it is.
Yeah.
But I just don't think they know the ramifications of it.
Yeah. I think that, even if someone is like so educated, right? I think that it goes back to what you were talking about with ethics and like their moral compass. Like, is that like, just because we can do that and it's probably safe, should we put it there? Like, is this the right thing to do? Cause I've worked with some really genius physicians who were batshit crazy, and putting things in different areas, same things with nurses in the past that I worked with who were like first training me, like, yeah, we can do that, but I don't, we probably shouldn't put it there. So what is like your number? Oh, go ahead.
Sorry. The other area is under eyes. I mean, I'm not I'm sure you're seeing it, but I think people are just going crazy with under eyes. And you know, part of it is the patient wanting to like add more and more and more, you know, you see how it can look better with a little bit. So then you're like, oh, let's add more. But filler can really stick around for a long, long time in the under eye area, and it can have some very bad long-term consequences. So you know, that's an area I'm really worried about, like what's going to happen.
Think people are getting carried away with the under eye more so now than ever because of cannula use?
Yes. I think the cannula use has really expedited like that. And then I think we have kind of more, you know, we have more fillers and like a lot more thinner fillers. So people think, oh, a thinner filler is better. So let me start putting it in the under eye area. But then a lot of those thinner fillers can have issues as well. And I think now we just have so many more injectors now than we did a few years ago. So everyone's just being a little bit more cavalier about it without really understanding the true anatomy and the physiology. And you know, it's, and I don't want to say that it's like non-surgeons that are doing, there are, you know, surgeons that should know better about the under eye anatomy that are over injecting that area also. So I think everyone is kind of at fault and we need to pump the brakes on that one a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. Which is why I'm so glad I found one of the good guys. You, Dr. Grace Lee Pang, Dr. There are a few surgeons that I really, really
love
so much. Yeah, she's awesome. Okay, so I just want to bring you back to a memory really quickly. The first time I met you in person was at an Evolus ad board. And I had been following you for a while. And I remember that I saw the roster. And I saw that you were going to be going, and I was like, act cool, Vanessa. All right, just be cool. Just like relax. I was really nervous at that ad board because I think I was like one of the only nurses there. I think there might have been one other nurse, and I was sitting with these plastic surgeons and dermatologists that I've looked up to for so long. And a lot of times when I've met maybe like celebrities and some docs or providers who I've looked up to in the past, it can be disappointing when you meet someone. Yes. But before I could go up to you and introduce myself, I remember you came up to me and you took my hands and you were like, I am so happy to meet you. I'm so proud of what you're doing in our community. I really respect you. My name is so-and-so, blah, 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 whatever. And I was like, God. I've been touched by an angel.
Fangirling all over you. I was like, fangirl. No, I honestly, like, I think I tell you that every time I see you, like, I'm just so proud of everything you've accomplished. You are so ethical. You are so artful. You are so thoughtful. You're just like an all around amazing woman. You're a mom, you're an entrepreneur, and you're just an all around, you're a goddess. I mean, like, you're beautiful. You're like, I say that to you multiple times a week. You're a goddess.
I just call her. I call her up so she can say it.
Yeah.
Well, I want to say for sure, first of all, it's such a pleasure to have you on the podcast, but also to knowing that I have someone like you in the field who is a leader and excellent at their craft and is a woman of color and it has a busy, you know, practice and as a wife and mother, all of those things, like, you're doing some amazing things for our community and our industry. So thank you so much. Thank you so much for joining us. And I'll probably text you as soon as we get off of this.
Thank you so much. I feel so honored that you invited me to come on here. I love everything you do. And I love the podcast and I love your Instagram and I love your TikTok, by the way.
Oh,
that's like a whole nother level.
It's so much fun. It's
But I mean,
weird. The weirder you are, the more people love it. And that's like my jam.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'll see you on the TikTok then.
Yeah. On the tickety talk, like my husband likes to call it. Yeah. I'll see you on the tickety talk.
I'll see you on the TikTok. I'm like an old person. All right. Thank you so much, Dr. Sunder. Have a great one.
You too. Stay safe and healthy.
Bye.
Bye.